Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vungani. Thank you for joining us. Today on the show, we continue to examine the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic as global cases are close to 5 million infections, with death at around 330,000. These figures continue to change on a daily basis as more countries either ramp up testing and relax social distancing rules, including reopening parts of their economies. In Africa, while the number of cases continue to rise, they still remain much lower than the rest of the world. Figures compiled by Johns Hopkins University show that there have been a little over 90,000 cases with confirmed coronavirus death at around 2,898. Now, again, these figures change on a daily basis. And so as countries across Africa begin to slowly reopen parts of their economies, it is clear that the last 2 months have tested the continent's economic resilience, especially for countries in sub-Saharan Africa. Development experts fear that even though Africa has less than 1% of the total COVID-19 infections, the continent will most likely face the biggest economic fallout as a result of the lockdown measures instituted by various countries. Meanwhile, as countries begin to lift lockdowns, a top World Health official warns that if countries reopen their economies without setting up strong contact tracing, testing, and isolation of those who test positive, the virus will take off again.
We're seeing some hope as many countries exit these so-called lockdowns, and this is good. It allows economic life to return. But extreme vigilance is required, and not just vigilance. Many countries, as the DG has said, have made very systematic investments in building up their public health capacities during the lockdowns. Others have not.
That is Dr. Michael Ryan, the World Health Organization's emergencies chief. Now, health experts say that millions of people will need mental health care as many suffer psychological distress from fear, loneliness, economic upheaval, many of these that have been triggered by the COVID-19 pandemic. A UN policy brief named COVID-19 and the Need for Action on Mental Health that was issued by UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres explores the issues brought on by the crisis and offers recommendations. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
National surveys carried out this year reveal widespread prevalence of distress in populations, with levels as high as 35% in China, 60% in Iran, and 45% in the United States. Similar studies among healthcare workers find anxiety levels have risen an average of 45% in countries such as Canada, China, and Pakistan. Devorah Kestel is director of the World Health Organization's Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse. She says measures must be taken now to protect and promote care for such existing conditions.
This is something that needs to be done in the middle of the crisis, so that we can prevent things to become worse in the near future. We are all witnessing in every country of the world the risk of an economic turmoil that will affect people.
Kestel says mental health problems have surged during similar economic crises in the past, leading to high rates of suicide. One of the major recommendations in the UN Secretary General's policy brief is to ensure mental health and psychosocial support are widely available in any emergency. What may be feasible in rich countries may not be possible in the developing world. For example, WHO notes 1 in 5 people in South Sudan has a mental health condition, with only one professional available for every 4 million people. Kestel tells VOA that the WHO and other agencies have been working for years to strengthen the capacity of non-mental health professionals to provide care.
We are promoting the modalities where the community, some community leaders or sectors within the community, such as traditional healers in some contexts, could receive the basic knowledge and training that is needed in order to provide care to those in need.
The United Nations says psychological trauma will remain after COVID-19. The disease caused by the coronavirus is gone. It urges nations to reform, strengthen, and invest more money in their mental health care systems. It says these services will be needed to support societies as they recover from the terrible consequences of this life-changing event. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In many cities around the continent, as partial lockdowns continue, millions of people are beginning to feel the economic pinch from months without work. But as social distancing restrictions begin to ease, especially in urban areas like Uganda's capital, Kampala, some residents were able to tell us about how the lockdowns affected them.
I'm called Katsime Bosco. This lockdown has forced me to live in a life that I'm not used to. For example, cutting off my personal rights, my hobbies, like free movements. I like gymming, watching movies in theaters. And the worst of all, closing of churches. On the side of my work, I'm a business person. So now I'm using my capital to survive, and of which I don't know when this will end.
My name is Zaida Ibrahim in Juba. Economically, I can no longer help my dependents and parents the way I used to, because I have to solely depend on my salary. Before the lockdown, I could do other businesses and then get extra money to make sure that they get what they require. But for now, I can't do that. I have to focus on things that directly concern me or affect me. And then there are things I was doing, like construction. I cannot continue to do that. That means I'm not going to grow this year. So that is a very big one there.
My name is Bantu Drake. I'm a businessman. I deal in secondhand clothes. I've got a bar. Then professionally, I play for Kigezi FC in a regional league. I do football. Businesses are not going on well. Ever since lockdown started, bars were closed. We are not getting any good of secondhand clothes because they are not allowed in the country. At the moment, we are just using the little money that we had saved. That's the money that we are trying to buy some goods, take at home.
Welcome back. You're listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Joining me via Skype from Kampala, Uganda, is Joseph Masembe, an environmental activist and lawyer based in Kampala. Mr. Masembe heads a local environmental NGO known as Uganda's Little Hands Go Green. He also runs one of the biggest green festivals on the continent of Africa. Mr. Masembe says that the mission of his NGO is to educate young students about environmental conservation. He tells me that since schools were closed in March of this year, his organization has had to halt operations.
The lockdown has affected me. I'll put it this way. I primarily work with kids in their schools and communities. I have been teaching children environmental conservation education, doing talent among children. I literally operate in the schools all year round. That is the model of my work. We've been locked down since literally March 18th. And for that entire period, schools have closed. Children are not in school. There is no traveling, lesser community engagement. So literally, anybody that works with children, works with families, does community work, is seated at home doing nothing. Now, the president's speech yesterday intimated that they will, when schools resume, it will only be for the candidate classes. So basically, if you're going to sit P7, you're going to sit senior 4, you're going to sit senior 6, those are the ones who will literally be going to school. But again, they also have to maintain social distancing. Question is, what are you going to be able to do then? You can't do activities there. So much of the people, we have been trying a lot of online engagement, but this is not the Western world where Wi-Fi is a conditio sine qua non for every other family. You get the point. People ration data the way you ration beans and maize.
I do want to talk about what the president said, and but I want to know a little more about the transportation in and out of the city. You said that public transportation is limited. What do you mean by limited?
I was trying to be polite. There is no public transport allowed. Private transport is also not allowed. You can only travel if you're an essential worker and you got a sticker. You can't move with the motorbikes. Motorbikes can move the traditional borders, but without passengers or clients or whatever it is. So at the end of the day, if you own a bike, a motorbike or a bicycle, then you can move around with ease. But
it is fair to say that if you own a motorbike, that yes, you also do border as a business, which yes, has been shut down for the last 2 months. I'm kind of curious to know, with the number of people that actually drive border, operate these border motorbikes and bicycles, actually motorbikes and bajajas and these little scooters. There are thousands of them. When I go through Kampala, there are thousands of them. Where are they? How is that economy able to survive this lockdown for this long?
That exactly is the crux of the matter. People are starving. People are struggling. I have a couple of people who are my border guys, and they occasionally say, please, chief, you know, send me some 50,000 shillings or 20,000 shillings. If we ever resume work, I will pay you back slowly, because they really can't survive. You know what I mean? It's tight. And then the pain of it is that Uganda hasn't registered any COVID death so far. Almost all the cases, I think 220 something plus, are largely from people, truck drivers who come from across the different countries. So Ugandans asking themselves, why would we sit down, starve to death, obey all these rules, only for people to come in from outside and bring in this corona?
Right.
So I think it's been a bit of quite a challenge. You actually wonder how these people are surviving, but people are
struggling. So one of the ways people are surviving is that government is providing food. And I saw President Museveni yesterday showing Ugandans how much one kilo of cornmeal, maize meal, of kawunga can last them.
I think there's a massive detachment from reality.
Yeah.
Not at the presidential level. I believe it is not at that level. It is somewhere here within the food soldiers. And here's the reason why. Because government has been giving out relief food. But after 60 days of lockdown, there are areas within Kampala alone that have not seen this food.
Mm.
So the question is, how effective is it? You get the point.
The food distribution.
Might it have been? Yes.
So is it the issue of the logistics itself, or there's a larger issue that there's not enough food?
No, the food is there, because you see donations every other day. That is for sure. I think the food is there.
Where's that food coming from? Is it in the storage? Is it food that is being is being produced right now? If sections of the
economy have been cut off. As soon as the crisis hit in, for some odd reason, there was a government said buy food, and then there was already a supplier who was ready, who had, in hindsight, he had figured out that we would need food.
Had figured out the foresight.
It was there.
Yeah.
What? 52 billion worth of food.
Right.
Because now companies have been giving out food. Country. You see them every other day giving out food to people. You know, to the task force, they give out task, you know, portion, milk, what, bananas, that whole, the whole thing. But the effect, you asked if there is food production, you should realize that farmers would grow their matoke and the lots of produce and bring it to market, to hotels, to individuals, to restaurants, which have all now been shut down.
Right.
So now there's a lot of food.
There's excess food in the hands of
yes. But there are fewer people to purchase it because the purchasing power is limited right now. Right. So you find that, I'll give you an example, a tray of eggs. A tray of eggs used to cost about 12,000 Uganda shillings. It is now as low as 6,000 or 7,000.
Interesting. Interesting phenomenon that the food prices have dropped during...
there's nobody to buy. There's nobody to... Yes, there's nobody with the purchasing power to go out and buy. Okay. It is cheaper to buy a whole chicken right now than a kilo of meat. Because a kilo of meat costs about 15,000 shillings. Mm. Chicken used to cost about 25,000 shillings to 30,000 shillings. Now you buy chicken for as little as 10,000 shillings. Because chicken feed are expensive, so people can't buy chicken feed to feed their chickens. And even if they feed them, who's going to buy the chickens? Restaurants are not operating, hotels are not operating. The eggs, the confectioners used to buy trays of eggs to make their cakes, restaurants, people who do omelets, breakfasts, and all that. Now that's not operation. That's why a tray of eggs is almost 50% cheaper. So the effect on, it's not so much about whether there is no food. There is a lot of food in abundance. The problem is purchasing power to purchase it or ability to distribute it, the logistics of transporting the food.
Let's take a quick break as we go to Nigeria, where, like Uganda, the coronavirus has forced schools to close, leaving millions of children without access to education. Ifeok Etang looks at how families are trying to cope in this report from Jos, Nigeria.
Seated under a pine tree on a sunny afternoon, 13-year-old Charity, Yakubu's older sister, Susan, is playing the role of teacher as she takes Charity through lessons she would have been learning in school. This has been their routine since March, when the coronavirus pandemic led Nigeria to close schools.
I feel very sad because I don't get to learn new things. All the things I've learned, I've forgotten them. So I want government to help us. By God's grace, let this coronavirus pandemic finish so that everyone can get to go back to school.
Nigeria's National Bureau of Statistics says only 1 in 4 Nigerians have internet access, but 3 out of 4 have mobile phones. Nigerian educators like Bala Babangida, the principal of the Unique Schools in Jos, says that while some Nigerians have been able to switch to online and social media learning, there are challenges.
Looking at the cost of data and even the devices to use for effective learning, it is a bit problematic to Nigerians. So I think if the government can do something about it, it will go a long way to help to put a balance between the rich and the poor.
With 40% of Nigerians living on less than $1 a day, the added cost makes remote learning for the vast majority out of reach. Veronica Ayuba has her 10-year-old daughter with her at her vegetable stall to help with the sales. Ayuba says she would rather have a daughter at home learning her schoolwork, but she's unable to help. Ayuba points out that authorities are saying parents should begin to teach children at home, but she says she doesn't know how to read and she doesn't know where to start. Making matters worse, the restrictions brought on by COVID-19 have cost many their jobs, including Yakubu's mother, Salome, a domestic housemaid. There's no money, Salome says, including money for food. She wonders where they can find the money to buy a good phone so they can learn on the internet. To help bridge the education gap, Nigeria is broadcasting lessons on state-run television and radio stations while children wait for the pandemic to ease up enough to allow schools to reopen. Ifeok Etang for VOA News, Jos, Nigeria.
Welcome back. You're listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Now, due to the coronavirus global pandemic, which is also the topic of today's show, we are working from home since most of our cities or towns are still under lockdown restrictions of some kind. And that's why the show might sound a little different. We are basically working from our little home studios. You know, this is a global pandemic that has affected the whole world. Many countries have had cases of COVID-19. Well, except maybe one 2002. Now, last week we talked about Lesotho being one of those countries that had not yet registered a single COVID case. There are reports now that to indicate that that changed as of last week, making Lesotho the last country in Africa to be affected by the deadly virus. In Uganda, the president addressed the nation this week, but many analysts say that he left more questions than answers. Joseph Masembe, still with us from Kampala, Uganda, via Skype, explains.
Categorically said that they are opening up. It's okay. We have opened up. Then we got excited. Then he said, but on a government is going to give everybody, every Ugandan, a mask. And these are the officially recognized masks. So then you'll use them for the lockdown. But the masks will be ready in 2 weeks. So, so now what I am also not very sure is whether we are... let me leave that with you. You probably will understand it better.
I have to say that President Museveni is one of the most memed presidents in the world. I think the most memed president in Africa right now. And I'm not saying that as a bad thing, but he provides a lot of fodder to the meme industry each time he gives one of those national addresses or releases a video.
I am sure he always means well anyway. He's a Pan-African at heart, and he loves his people more than anything. I don't know whether the people around him sometimes give him the right or wrong information, or because honestly speaking, and sometimes I hope I actually think that it is intentional sometimes, because you don't want to have an outburst. Goal or no goal, goal or no goal. You say no, it's subject to review. You get the point. Mm-hmm. So they you manage expectations. Because imagine if they had sat down one day and said, you know what, we are going in a 60-day lockdown, people would riot.
Right.
But they give it to you in doses, 14 days, let's look at it. Now take 12, now take 21, now take 14. Now I have opened up, yeah! But you must all have masks, which are coming from 90 and they'll be ready in 2 weeks. So essentially, you have been given a 2-week extension. But politely so, by the time you settle it in your mind, it's 3 days and you are at peace, you are not rioting, so.
He understands his people quite well. And, you know, I mean, it's a very difficult situation. Most countries are struggling through this, even the developed countries. Sections of the economy are open right now? If I was to come to Kampala, what is the...
I don't know whether I would call it a catch-22. You have the garages open. They tell you the carpenters, I think, because people are sleeping too much and breaking beds or something like that. Mm. Too much activity going on there. Garages, carpenters, and all these other people, mostly the technical staff. But the problem is, how do they travel to those places? How do they get to work? And who are they going to serve if the general public doesn't have access to transportation? You get the point.
So transportation is a big problem right now. Everything else, yeah. If you're able to access some form of transportation into the city,
yeah,
you can go about your normal business. I'm, of course, that was before the whole mask, you know, 2 week.
Yes, actually, but not even normal business, because who would you interact with? Who would you work with? If you're selling stuff, you have nobody to sell them to. If you're repairing cars, you have no cars to repair. So I've given you the permission to go open your garages, but literally you're going to do nothing. So I don't believe in the partial opening up. I mean, you either open up or you don't. Because at the end of the day, I don't want to spend a little money to travel to work, to sit and not attend to anybody.
Do you walk around in your neighborhood?
Yes, I do. And the story is still
like
the same.
In your neighborhood?
I have some friends who are shopkeepers and they tell you, you know what? My shop is pretty much empty. Everybody buys on credit. And you won't say no, because when they had the money and they were working, they sustained you. You get the point. So I said, I'm literally here. I open up and I'm eating on my stock. So I sell posho. I eat on that. I eat rice. If I want spaghetti, I eat some of it. People are trying their best to survive within the circumstances. The good thing is we understand that it's not just about Uganda. It's a global pandemic. The issue sometimes people have is, all the cases are largely not Uganda. They're external. So why are we doing things by the book? Why are we behaving and then suffering at the expense of those other chaps out there? Truck drivers, so they drive in and they bring goods and produce, which makes sense. But who is going to consume it? You get the point. Mm. Apart from the ones that are passing through to go to Congo,
are you
Burundi,
saying,
Rwanda, South Sudan.
Are you essentially saying that if they close off the borders, you should be able to open without any fear of...
100%. 100%. Because the only Ugandan cases that were there are those from people who in March came through Dubai and those other places, and then they went into quarantine, or the people they interacted with. But I think 68 of those have so far gotten healed. They are okay. And they have been released and they are either back home or stuff like that. So we do not have community cases as such. There is one or two isolated cases, but those are also of people who've interacted with truck drivers.
Welcome back. This is Up Front on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. I am joined via Skype by Joseph Masembe, an environmental activist and lawyer based in Kampala, Uganda. Masembe says that even though the Ugandan government has been distributing food to the local population during this lockdown, many people have yet to receive their food rations because the process has been handicapped by both corruption and logistical problems. Masembe goes as far as to suggest that it would have been easier for the government of Uganda to just hand out cash so residents could buy their own food.
I believe there should be a point at a time when everybody is selfless, especially our leaders, where the focus is on, may I tell people, you're running around giving money food that never reaches. Every household in Uganda has a number or a relative that is registered on mobile money. Even if you had sent 10,000 shillings to every registered number alone, it would mean that almost everybody countrywide will have gotten a piece of kaunga and beans. I can catch that 10, 20,000 shillings and I go to the shopkeeper who I always buy from and say, yes, 20,000. It's deposit. I don't have money.
You're saying instead of handing out food, they should have given out cash?
Yes, because they buy food. The initial food was worth 52 billion. That's the first order we had. Then they have the logistical costs, transport, fuel, what, allowances, people to distribute, and it still doesn't get to the final recipient anyway.
Right.
So you're spending hundreds of billions.
Giving people money directly, cash directly, would have helped rectify the issue of corruption.
Exactly. Because Jackson, at the end of the day, if I buy stuff from me every other day, I'll come and give you 20,000 shillings, and then I take stuff worth 50,000 shillings. I take 20 kilos of kaunga, I take kilos of beans, I go home and sit down and, you know, and feed my family. I will have gotten a piece. But now the lockdown is supposed to end, and some areas have still not gotten food. Then there are people who ride these bikes, the border borders, and take passengers. They transport children to school, they take people to work, they take from point A to B. They leave.
They take you to the last mile of the city.
Day by day, he saves a couple of coins. He goes, buys some milk, some food. They have three children, and they survive. So those are also out of work for 60 days. Then there is your average entertainment.
Thank you, Joseph. And with that, we come to the end of our show. I want to thank our guest, Joseph Masembe from Uganda. Many thanks to our reporters around the continent who continue to tirelessly cover this story. For more reporting on this issue and others, check out our website at voanews.com. Check out our entertainment and sports TV program, Red Carpet. Connect with us on our social media platforms. We are on Facebook, we are on YouTube where you can watch our videos, we are on Instagram and on Twitter. We tweet at VOA Africa, and my personal Twitter handle is Upfront Africa. That is also my Instagram handle, Upfront Africa. Until next time, as our elders say, if your only tool is a hammer, you will see every problem as a nail. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Goodbye, Africa.
This is